play day. It's a delight to be here. Thank you for that suggestion. Thank you, Paul, for inviting me. I'm very, very happy to be here. I'm going to read a poem that is, you know, some, I don't know, I guess it's a poem about Ireland, and it also has nothing whatsoever to do with that. It's called Anniversary. The giddy cathedral swooned. The night had been unremarkable for being remarkable, and was much like 1916, and mostly unlike the Titanic. It would have been her 25th birthday, he said, of the older sister he always felt had been his shadow, who appeared in dreams as a porch light in the mist, an igloo once, once as the breastplate and harness of Dolph Lundgren as He-Man. The bars were closing. Young men sallied in the streets like riderless horses. She never had a name, he said. So he thought of one. The avenue he lived on then reeled around a gigantic horse chestnut tree, and the pavement was lousy with conkers and seed cases. He said, you know, everything in the world either is or isn't that tree. Standing at the wrought iron railings, we recognized a man we'd never seen before. His distressed leather doctor's bag was handsome, and he opened it. I'd like to read a poem which is about the particular effect that I have enjoyed. Whether or not you have enjoyed that is a very different matter. It's the one of buying a jacket that somebody else has owned, and for a reason, you should know better, I guess. You wonder about who that person was, and I guess whatever effect there might be in taking on the identity of that person to some extent. I should have stopped myself before I started, but anyway. Daydream of the jacket. My new vintage houndstooth jacket was catching eyes in the aisles of the supermarket. I felt like someone else, an older man perhaps, a taller man, a man without a beard. And when I saw myself reflected in the freezer glass, I was. I felt I had known myself for many years up to this point. I stood like the koi in decoy in the quiet supermarket, between the frozen raspberries and the shredded suet. When my neighbour, Mrs. Carmichael, rounded the corner. Coconut oil, coconut milk, desiccated coconut. Her basket was a who's who of coconut. I suppose she was cooking something with coconut, though Mr. Carmichael had always been the one to shop. Together at the checkout, she too admired my jacket and its unimpeachable stitching. This was when I remembered there had been rain on our wedding day. Burgundy leather in the big car, a rear window, my parents. But into my jacket I slipped this morning a shopping list that for all my life I was sure I was someone younger. Then she said, "You are my husband, aren't you?" "I am," I said, and went home. And since we kept canaries, fed the canaries. For the day and the occasion that's in it, for some reason or another, I was one of the people who was reading Roddy Doyle's book with Roy Keane, his biography, his story, his second half, the second half, I think maybe it was called. I'm fascinated by Roy Keane, as I think many people are. So one of the things I did in order to enjoy reading it was to make a couple of collages from that text. So I would take the first chapter and whatever words appear in that, I might organize them into something else. And I did this with Apple, so I might read the first few of these that I did. Roy Keane's a fascinating person. I just think that, He has many sides. This is chapter one. Actually, I wish I'd made my own way. No performance, no sneering ghost behind me. Then, after all was said and done, the violence, the fucked cruciate, a couple of hundred grand, I could sleep. There would be no Nightmare City, no Big Shot QC, no media coverage selling scandal. But Jesus, it's tough, with my wages, to think of being finished, fighting against that slow angle of time. They admired me, but fuck it, I don't regret it. I thought of my family, I thought of Ireland, Norway, the coast of Japan. The world was waiting. Books are a lot of crap. He didn't say that. I said that. He didn't say this about Cristiano Ronaldo either. Ronaldo. Light of my life, player of my dreams, Cristiano at 10 in the morning in the mirror. His language was cappuccino and sunglasses. We were dizzy in the dressing room, Ronaldo. He was two halves like I am, like you are. That last time laughing in the Four Seasons and wary of the tarnished beach of scallops, I felt like a spectator in my own life. Night came in to settle slow and heavy, the way praise can, like metals brilliant in the light. I never minded losing matches or losing medals or losing a gesture I love, so it seems. Maybe he loved me, I don't know. I love the edge of the cliff on the rock of Gibraltar, above the dark beach. Chapter three. I'll just read this one, maybe one more. It's hard reading, you know. It's incredible, but you know. Anyway, my manager. My manager isn't under threat from Louis. He says, defend often with momentum fair, get position theory done together and run, or jealous Gerard will touch crystal trophies. My manager had important Friday morning training. Some younger lads were dressing in the stadium and disagreement was battering me like little fish. And as I've said, I'm not a lover of fish. I needed a mouth replacement. I was jealous of their age and energy, their passion. In the March light, my legs were agony. The next day, I was a no-strength nothing in bed when the club doctor knocked. I had been trying to live like an Italian. One more from Ronnie. The professionals. We were queuing for dinner at the hotel, and Edwin was talking about Mozambique, the changing of the season, making love, the Villa incident, loyalty, and we laughed. Professionals are more patient than salt. There was a pool of Portuguese champagne that would flow like a ball from the foot of a young lad on a freezing January morning. Gary Neville had an atmosphere of drink and started down that old romantic road. Sometimes I want to get in the Audi, he said, and drive to Edinburgh or Liverpool or the Algarve or the Rock of Gibraltar. Sometimes I feel this uncertain anger. Gary Neville didn't say. I'll read a poem about a video game, which is something that is very important to me, or at least was anyway. When I was a lot younger, I was on holiday on the Isle of Man, and it's the first place that I ever managed to encounter a video game arcade. And one of the great things about being there was it was just when old 10-pence pieces in the UK had been swapped for newer ones. And whoever ran this arcade, probably at a loss, just kept a jar of these old 10-pence you could sort of barter with in order to use the machines. And I found Street Fighter 2 there, and I had a really great time. I guess in some ways it's an analogy, but that component isn't in it presently, or too obviously, I should say. Anyway, Street Fighter 2. The Laxey water wheel, or Lady Isabella, shoots the breeze with the tailless cats that linger by the silver mine. Who knows what they're thinking? I'm in a dim basement arcade in Douglas, palming 10 pence pieces into Ryu's disciplined and storied fists. So to a village of sedge and cinchona on the Brazilian Amazon, where an anaconda coils a mahogany tree. So to a sumo dojo there in Honshu, where the sun happens perpetually to rise near the symmetrical peak of Fuji. So to the cascade of salt that is the promenade, where I see for the first and last time, by dint of gin and tonics, my mother drunk. Here I do a great impression of an 8-year-old about to fall into the sea. In those days, the sun still swung east to west, and don't doubt for a second, the moon then looked almost exactly as it does to you now, like melted bone, like something's severed limb. In the Air Force Base at Langley, an F-16 has dipped its beak in the oil fires of Kuwait, and its Major Guile and his flash kick I just can't seem to beat. He's more leg than man, more man than pixel. Had I seen then the black mirage of the future, I might have thought, wouldn't it be fine to climb into the machine and carry on like the automated Turk, going down, down, forward, forward. Had my life glitched just then, I might have swapped my bones for PCBs and said, bring your shining pockets to my island, I'm pretty good. I'll read a poem about working in a bowling alley, which is not something that I've ever done, but I'm not against it. More specifically, it's about someone who's working in a bowling alley, who for one reason or another is sort of obsessed with that locker room mystery, that maybe the most famous of them, in which a man is found hanging in a barn, at an impossible height, and the clue is that there's a patch of water under him. There's nothing obvious as to how he could have got there, but the clue is. This is about that, what must be a peculiar situation. My second favourite locked room mystery. Since I started working at the bowling alley, I think about it all the time. In his barn, from a high rafter or crossbeam, a man has hanged himself with no ladder or platform to get him there. Nothing suspicious, save a patch of damp on the straw-strewn dirt floor. Cheryl, on the other hand, is really into tarot. When the soda fountain's not so busy, she shuffles up my destiny, and every time, she seems to draw the lovers. Think about it. She winks and flashes the braces in her smile and the pin setters chew like beautiful mouths. Thinking about the future always makes me so thirsty. So while Cheryl sorts out pin jams and inventories the shoes, I slip a Coke with plenty of chipped ice. And before long, my head is full of icemen and their cold chariots, horse-drawn ice plows, the lakes of Massachusetts. When she's fed up with kismet, Cheryl lets me build little card castles, and I sometimes think I could marry her some hot day in the summer, an ice sculpture of a bowling pin undoing itself into a puddle of water at the highest of June. And I think of his horses. What were their names? I'll maybe read two more poems. To take it out of the realm of all possible enjoyment, but this is about the quite well-regarded American pool player, Earl Strickland. I kind of despise a lot, but nevertheless, I'm totally compelled to watch, I guess. So this is the opposite of an ode. There's not really any celebration in this, but it's an ode about an ode to Earl Strickland, the terrible, terrible, excellent person that he is. Oh, Earl Strickland, I dislike you quite a lot. And it's not because you are a Gemini. You spoke up to the table like a Gemini, like a little god of diligence, fury, and full body English nine ball breaks. But it's not really even that. It's not the wraparound sports sunglasses or the pernickety quiver of break and game cues. And hey, a belly is not unbecoming for certain gentlemen of a certain age. It's not the bristled trapezium of your unmodish blonde moustache. It's not the cyan lycra billiard glove, shishi in the extreme. And less still, that weighted armband fixed around your bicep as an amulet or periapt. Whatever. Earl, yours is a game for one, played by two. One of whom is you, and the other, you. From those regional pool halls, eye-watering with smoke, a bad moon often on the rise, to the Riviera Hotel and Casino Nevada and the 8-Ball Open sponsored by Camel, you play in a long offbeat. A gold tooth rattles down a drain pipe. Earl Strickland, I dislike you quite a lot, and not because you shell act Stephen Hendry. It's not the cues of Cocobolo or Rosewood, or who knows, the drawn and dressed neck and spine of a whippersnapper wrapped with stacked leather or Irish linen, or the cotton you picked for bull money on the farm in Roseboro, North Carolina, or its tobacco, or its fat-striped watermelons rolling in the back of a pickup truck at angles you could, as a child, calculate. Earl Strickland, I dislike you quite a lot for the junk of your regalia and your snare. Earl Strickland, I dislike you quite a lot for the beauty you achieve when beauty is never your intention. Earl Strickland, make like Pangea and break. Make like some ancient stage magician who has cinched the trick so many times he has finally forgotten how and when the sleight of hand happens. For him, it is a mystery. The moment a white handkerchief turns into a dove. I'll read one more poem. Thank you for being such lovely people. I've had a lovely time the one other occasion I've been in court. I'm having a lovely time this evening. I look forward to hearing some poems from Julie, as I'm sure you are. I guess what I find myself doing is inventing an absurd situation, or not, maybe not an absurd situation, but an unusual situation, and situating something in it. So this poem, I guess, takes place after loads of animals have broken out of the zoo. Oh dear. The curfew. The radicals sprung the locks that night, hurrah. And their lovely collarbones were almost moonly. Rhinos shrieked and bellowed, elephants tromboned, and the animals nosed into town. Sunrise to sunrise, and sunrise we kept indoors. If you can't count your onions, what can you count? My grandfather used to say. He said a lot of things. Among the other miners, he was legendary, but no more than the thought of the pink crumple of his infant daughter's body came to mind. A glow would swell in the pit, the man with mayhem bauxite by the light his tenderness emitted. Some of me lived inside her even then. The memorial fountain says nothing of the weeks before the rescue failed, but mentions God, which, as my grandfather used to say, it's just the name of the plateau you view the consequences of your living from, or something like that. He said a lot of things. He grew wise and weary as an albatross, and left for that great kingdom of nevertheless. It would have pleased his handsome shoulders to watch this grizzly swoop for salmon in the fountain of his friends, or the Bengals, or the shaped-down squad of chimpanzees who bang and bang on the grocery window. One by one, 11 miners starve to death. In the streets, they collar or tranquilize the ocelots and run a spike of ketamine through the plumbing in the fountain. Dromedaries blue mood around the pub, aloof under their reservoirs of fat. One day, we hope the curfew will be lifted. I don't sleep, but oh, plateau, these days of violence have been my happiest. Even a cabbage is not without desire, my grandfather said one day. And now, among the animals, I feel under my skin the misery of a yellow wingbeak, and the words for things I thought I knew departing. And I understand him. Thank you very much.